Good Thursday. Today is September the 18th, and you're listening to My Farm. I had the opportunity to visit with a group of pathologists with the SCN Coalition, that's Soybean Cyst Nematode Coalition, this past week. We're going to share some of those conversations the next several days, learn about the research they're doing, and best management practices for the future. Stay tuned. We'll be back with that and more after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
We're going to conclude our conversation this morning with our guests from the SCN Coalition, a group of nematologists and plant pathologists, including Greg Tilka from Iowa State University, George Bird from Michigan State University, and Albert Tenuta, joining us from Ontario, Canada. Go to 2025 and beyond, and you sort of enter a third phase, if you will, of the SCN Coalition. What is the maybe the one or two things that you want growers to know?
I tell farmers that SCN isn't a death sentence for soybeans. It's a chronic health problem. And I liken it to high blood pressure in humans. So first step for managing high blood pressure or SCN is to know you've got it, and then you use multiple things to manage it. With high blood pressure, you might take a pill. You're also going to be told to exercise, lose some weight, do some other things. And the analogy or the parallels are very similar. So it all starts by knowing you've got the problem, and then you find out what are the options. And we've got resistant varieties, we've got seed treatments, we've got non-host crops, and you've got to be, it's a sustained, you're never going to eliminate SCN. You just got to manage it for profitability for the future.
Great, great analogy. I like that. That's very good. George, any thoughts from you?
Well, I think a surprising number of soybean growers have heard of the Soybean Cyst Nematode Coalition. I think we need to continue to work on that. And what we're doing right now is we have transferred the leadership for the coalition to a younger generation. And on top of that, at the moment, we are attempting to expand the coalition to include four different nematodes that will expand the coalition to include the southern states.
Albert?
Yeah, for me, two things. One, again, as Greg said, you know, don't fear soybean cyst nematode. You know, respect it. It can be managed, but you have to be consistent. You don't take a year off when it comes to managing soybean cyst nematode. And the other thing, as George mentioned, in terms of, you know, where we've been with this coalition and where we're progressing, not only from soybean cyst nematode, but other nematodes, is its long-lasting legacy. It was one of the first, I would say, regional cooperative projects out there that was very successful. It's left a legacy. We've seen other research and extension initiatives that have been based on the success and how the Soybean Cyst Nematode Coalition has. So other, you know, whether it's tar spot or other diseases, and that has, you know, the result of the hard work and the legacy that the SCN Coalition brought to the table.
Well, this has been a successful private sector, public sector coalition. And the one piece that we have to add to that is the fact that we also employed experts in marketing.
Great points again. My guest today, Greg Tilka from Iowa State University, George Bird with Michigan State University, an emeriti there, and Albert Tenuta from Ontario. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your time, for all the work you do on behalf of the soybean growers all around the area.
Thank you very
much.
Thanks
for having us, Dusty. Appreciate it.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions now. The condition of this year's corn and soybean crop offers an interesting illustration of how the drought can impact crops at different stages of development. USDA's Rod Bain has more.
When it comes to drought threats over the course of this growing season for corn and soybeans,
we made it through much of the summer with relatively minimal drought coverage.
Just 3% drought coverage for corn and bean growing areas on August 5th, according to USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey. Yet over the past month, drought coverage significantly expanded in parts of the corn and soybean belts.
corn went from 3% on August 5th, tripling to 9% in drought by September 2nd. Soybeans, because we had more production area in the Mid-South, we saw an even bigger expansion, 3% drought coverage, up to 16% of the U.S. soybean production area in drought by September 2nd.
Rippey says this illustrates the timing of drought and its impacts on crops, increasing dryness, aiding in corn and bean crop maturity, and the upcoming harvest. Yet, what about other crops? Rippey looks at wheat. For spring wheat,
drought was pretty expansive early in the growing season for spring wheat, and on August 5th, 35% of the U.S. spring wheat production area was in drought. That was actually down from a peak in July of 43% of the production area in drought. And even though we did see some late summer rain that reduced spring wheat in drought to 13% by September 2nd, that, of course, came largely too late for the crop, which is now being harvested.
And with winter wheat planting soon to start,
it is worth noting that 34% of the U.S. winter wheat production area is in drought on September 2nd. But interestingly, almost all of the plains production areas, the hard red winter wheat belt, is free of drought at this time, at 34%, mostly due to drought in the white wheat production areas of the Northwest and the soft red production areas of the Mid-South and lower Midwest.
Meanwhile, cotton growing areas covered in drought expanded month over month.
Cotton also was at 3% drought coverage on August 5th. That went up tenfold to 30% on September 2nd.
Yet Rippey says the drought expansion came at a time when cotton bolls opened in the later days of August in several key growing states. Crop condition due to flash drought in some growing areas lessened month over month, yet total cotton crop condition in the U.S. was more favorable than at the end of August 1 year ago. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great day.